right. Good morning, everyone, and welcome to the New Media Show. My name is Todd Cochran, and got a great show lined up for you today. It's a beautiful day here in Honolulu, but good morning, Rob. How are you?
Doing terrific, Todd. It's great to be back here again and thinking about overseas activities in the podcasting space. I think it's there's a lot of cool stuff going on over outside of the United States. It's not just all about the United States. So that's kind of the theme of today. And I also wanted to bring some attention to the old Zune HD. You can see it on my shirt there.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of people that are coming into the podcasting space that have never probably ever seen one or know that there was one of those that actually existed in the past. And I just wanted to show it again so people can see what a Zune HD looked like. It was a very early Microsoft platform that supported podcasting in the very early days. And as you can see, I have a special version of it that says RIP Zune 2006 to 2011.
That's funny. So you got that laser engraved upon its demise, yeah?
Yes, exactly. And this thing is a 64 gig. It holds a lot of stuff. So it's really thin, as you can tell. But anyway.
Well, I know we've got some stuff we're going to talk about that here in a little bit. But I want to welcome Isabella Russo on from the UK. Where exactly in are you located?
Hi, everyone. Well, I am located on the Isle of Wight. It's a little island just off the coast of the UK. Just between the France and the UK, essentially. Small, diamond-shaped little place, but very charming.
Well, we were talking before the show started, and you know, I guess your weather's turned nice, which is good. And I know that always can be a challenge in both Seattle and in where you're at. But hey, Rob, had a great time. Up in Burlington. And yeah. Bellingham had a great. The weather was only crappy a couple of days. It was beautiful. I went and drove around, saw the tulips, and
wow, that's exciting. So, is it going to make you want to move here?
Well, I think, you know, as one of the locals said, she says, "Well, if you were here last week, it had been crappy, and you may have a different opinion." So, I guess I'm in that sweet spot of the 3 months of decent weather. But yep. had a great time and a little new perspective, I guess. So, but glad to be back here in the chair doing this show. Just as a kind of a side note, my wife and I had won some tickets and we went to a sake sampling event last night, and they had over 100 sakes available to sample. And of course, you know, they give you about this much 100 times. And we did have a designated driver coming home last night. We needed it.
Saki will do that to you.
Yeah. And it was good. We found a couple of new brands we're going to probably put in stock in the liquor cabinet. But anyway, just I digress. So let's I guess we can start off and just talk about what's going on in the UK. And I know that you guys are thinking about having a big event. So I guess catch us up on the scene of what's happening in the UK.
Sure. Well, as both you and Rob know, Mike and I have been involved with podcasting now for, well, nearly 2 years. And we very much enjoyed New Media Expo. We've attended this year and the year before. And we thought, well, it's a shame, really, because we don't have much of that happening in the UK. And we've been trying to find an event that would bring similar people, similar kinds of people with podcasting interest. And none of that existed. So we thought, well, why won't we try and organize something, see how many people are interested and who's out there in general. So as soon as we actually got back from New Media Expo, we started to plan our first event, which was scheduled for 29th of March. We've just set up a website, which is the UKpodcasters.com, And we started to run various social media campaigns. And our website slowly started to build up, and all the Twitter and Facebook following started to go up. And we started to sell tickets to our first event. We ended up having 26 people coming in. It was very informal. But we had some special guests. So we had Anna Piazza coming from Spreaker, talking to podcasters about just, you know, technicalities of how to actually broadcast to the world. We had UK radio presenter Robin Banks, who we've been working for quite a while with, and he was just sharing his knowledge as to how to be a professional broadcaster. And it was just very interesting. We suddenly discovered that there are people who are just like us, wanting to learn about podcasting, wanting to socialize with other podcasters, and wanting to learn more, eager to really learn. So after the meetup, everyone was just simply asking, so when is the next one? When are you organizing the next thing? And even though you may say 26 people is really not much, in the grand scheme of things, of course it's not. And when you compare it to the New Media Expo, it's just a tiny event. But it has to start somewhere. So it will not start with 1,000 people attending. And the UK is much smaller than the US is. But we actually had people coming over from all different corners. We had someone coming over from Devon. We had some people coming over from Scotland, so far north, which was really good. So we actually attracted a crowd from all around, and we wanted to see what will come out of that. Once the event finished, as I said, everyone was just really eager to get the next thing going on, and we actually surveyed people and said, well, when would you like to have the next event? The answer was 3 to 6 months from the last one. So we started to plan the next one, and we thought, well, it would be good to actually have a mini conference. So we are in the process of planning. We have the venue confirmed, which is in Birmingham, which is very central in the UK pretty much for everyone. And we have a date confirmed, which is 16th of August. Tickets haven't got on sale yet. They will very soon. We are also in the process of setting a lineup of speakers. It will be a 1 day event. And yeah, so that's where we are so far.
Well, it sounds like, you know, you guys grassrooted it and have got it started. Do you have a sense then on, you know, what your total size of, you know, what is your available pool of, maybe Rob, you can answer this, because I don't know what the total pool size is in UK. Do you remember what you had when you were at Microsoft, what the number was?
Well, I would say that the UK market is probably the second largest kind of podcast consuming population or country. And then also, if you think about it, there's a lot of terrific podcasting coming out of the UK. Yeah. I mean, I would say that the biggest podcaster in the world is based there, and it's the BBC. There is a foundation of podcasting there that's been very established for many, many years. I mean, from even the very earliest, you know, years of podcasting. And so I think that, I mean, if you think about a lot of the shows that come out of there, they're listened to podcast listeners all over the world in a higher percentage than probably a lot of the shows that come out of the U.S. So I would say it's by far the second most important country in the world for podcasting, and I want to do everything I can to support that, because I think there's a lot of terrific stuff coming out of that country right now, and that's why we're talking about it today.
Well, I will just add that I'm glad you've mentioned BBC, even though it's such a great as you said, podcast, and they've been around for ages. It kind of sets the wrong idea to people about what podcasting is about.
Sure.
Many people, when they attended our event, they thought of podcasting as a way you know, when you've got a radio show, you just put your best bits from that radio show on a podcast. And I guess what we are trying to get people into thinking about podcasting as a way to learn things. So if you are passionate, I was actually talking to someone at the event and I said, well, you know, the thing you should be podcasting about is something you are really passionate about. So, you know, if you are a kid and someone said to you, what do you want to be when you grow up? That's the thing you should be podcasting about, because that's clearly your passion. And, you know, if you still remember that and you are still passionate, that's what you need to talk about. And that there is a need for more, I guess, indie podcasters. So those people who simply want to learn as they podcast and grow and want to build great things. And there is a great potential for that, but there is a lot of education that needs to happen here to actually tell people that, well, a podcast is not a radio. It's not a radio show that you perhaps associated with, because that's what BBC, well, quite a lot of BBC programs are structured very much like a radio show. And if you think about the US on the other end of the scale, you know, you have so many great podcasters who... Pat Flynn, Smart Passive Income. It's just a podcast that everyone knows about even here in the UK. And the structure is so different to what you would hear on a BBC podcast.
You're not going to get any argument from us, that's for sure. there's definitely a difference there. And though I think that there's a blending happening and radio is going to adapt more to podcasting than the other way around. So I think that, you know, you're exactly correct. I think podcasting is much different than radio, and there's a lot of education around that needs to happen. And I 100% agree with what you're saying, and that the opportunity, I think, in the UK and in Europe across, you know, all the countries of Europe, is to expand that area of content, like you're talking about, getting people to podcast about their passions and talk about areas that can help people in their areas of desire of learning more. So yeah, I mean, I 100% agree, and I think that a conference over there can help simulate that.
Absolutely, and. Absolutely. And I think that with podcasting, it sort of has to really switch to almost like a business podcasting. I do a lot of audio branding sessions with podcasters, and majority of people I work with are actually professionals. So there is a lot of lawyers, nurses, airplane pilots, and it's just a profession, and they utilize podcasting as another platform, another way to reach out to potential customers. And that's through sharing of their knowledge, which what people want to hear on the other end of the scale.
And I think it's, you know, with the guidance, a lot of those folks that have businesses can do something that's not pitchy, but at the same time, informational, and then makes, you know, basically helps people win, you know, win their business. I think that's you know, a good aspect of podcasting that we've talked about here quite a little bit. You know, I know that from an audience standpoint that the folks are listening, because I think we run, and I haven't done a number poll here recently, but I think if I remember correctly, the average was, you know, even on my personal shows, 12 or 13% of the audience comes from the UK. So there's definitely significant number of listeners out there. And, you know, now that we've kind of, you know, become mainstream per se, it's a lot easier to get people to, you know, pull you up on a mobile device and really click play. So, you know, the ease of being able to consume the content is helping the listeners come on board as well, too.
Absolutely.
So on your conference then, what is the, you know, are you probably... based on the number of tickets you sell, are you planning on doing a one-day event? And then are you going to have a session track? Are you going to put the sessions together at the event? Or how are you going to structure that?
It is going to be a one-day event. We are planning on having probably four sessions, fit in throughout the whole day. We have actually surveyed people we have on our mailing list and on our social media accounts just to know where they are and what sort of content they would like to see. So it seems that a majority of people are actually intermediate podcasters, so they already know quite a lot and would like to enhance on that. So from what we were thinking so far, it may still change because it is in the planning stage still. We want to have a session, sort of technical session on the audio, putting the audio together and perhaps the most common issues podcasters come across and some easy ways to overcome that. So that will be one of the sessions we plan to put together. We would like to have something about marketing your podcast and just general tools and various different things you can use to become more successful with reaching out to your audience and retaining it, as well as some couple of other sessions. One we were hoping to have around improving your speech as a podcaster, broadcaster, so sort of training people a little bit about what is okay and good to do and what are the things that perhaps you shouldn't do. And it's actually quite a shame because still a lot of really good podcasters make a lot of mistakes that could be very easily avoided. Sorry.
No, me too.
So we are hoping to bring an authority in the UK on that. So someone who trains broadcasters perhaps transfer that knowledge onto the podcasting. Not all of it will apply because obviously when you broadcast live on a show on a radio, you have to take into consideration other things. But we are hoping to really make it packed full of really good content. So a lot of takeaways. We are still in the process of talking to a potential keynote speaker, which I can't let any more details out at the moment yet, as they are not confirmed. But we hope to attract some interesting people to share their knowledge and to talk to podcasters in the UK.
Yeah, I think if one piece of advice Rob and I can give you right off the top of is really be wise in your keynote speakers, because what that really will do is once you do announce the person that you're working with, if they're a high profile type of person and they're a mover and shaker in the space, you're going to be able to attract a lot more people to the event. That just helps drive your it's going to drive your ticket sales because people want to come just to hear that person.
Absolutely. Although it's not, it is about filling the spaces. So we want to tell as many people as we possibly can about the event. And I hope that through all the things that we want to give them in the form of content, they will want to come in and attend. But we also plan to have an evening party. So we've actually, the hotel we negotiated with, they've got a wonderful VIP area at the bar and they've agreed to hire it for us exclusively. So there will be plenty of opportunities to actually network with people as well, with a possibility to talk. So no loud music or things like that. So just a pure networking event as well in the evening.
You mean you don't like the events where you go to and the the audio is 5,000 decibels and you can't talk to the person next to you?
I don't know who does unless you're going to a concert of some sort.
Yeah, that's the thing that drives me. What's going on here? I'm having problems with the switch. That's the thing that drives me crazy when I go to conferences and they have an evening event and you go there to network and and I couldn't do it on the mic, but you have to talk really loud because.
I know. Yeah. And then the next day you don't have a voice because you're hoarse. That always happens to me.
Yeah.
We had an event one time where we had a DJ and I said, listen, I want people to be able to talk. You're here to provide background music like the elevator. And he looks at me in disdain because he's used to, turning the volume up. I'm like, no, we're not here to dance. You're here to just to entertain. And he had a hard time. I had to go over to him a couple of times and, down with the audio. And So
yeah, he probably didn't like actually the idea that his music was being associated with elevator music though, Todd.
That's right.
Well, that was, you know, if you, you know, you almost have to spell it out to people sometimes.
Hey, you know, those musicians can be sensitive to those kinds of things.
Yeah. Hey, I do want to just, I know I told you, Rob, but a couple days ago, and this is, you know, I probably should have talked about this at the beginning of the show, but, you know, one thing that podcasters face are outages from time to time. And, you know, either a hosting outage or a place for your medias. And it's just the, you know, the internet is run on computers, and sometimes computers and configurations and switches and something goes bad. And the way I like to put it often is that sometimes an electronic component will let the smoke out. In other words, it'll, you know, a little capacitor or something will fry and it'll smoke a little bit, and then you're dead in the water. But Thursday morning, I basically came into the studio, did all my normal stuff. The site was up, and between here and driving my kids to school, my phone started beeping, and basically it was my monitoring service saying, hey, your site is down. And, you know, you're thinking to yourself, okay, it's probably needs to be rebooted. I haven't rebooted the machine in 9 months. It's probably that. And I called Angelo and I said, go over and look at it. And he says, dude, I can't even get into it. I'm like, that steps it up a level. And, ultimately got on GoDaddy's website and basically had him reboot the server. Someone had to actually go, you know, push the button.
Yeah.
And that didn't do it. So we went to the next level, and basically the LAN card in the computer that runs my website had fried, and no LAN card, no internet. You know, and during that during that time, you know, you're thinking in the back of your mind, are the backups done? When was the last time? You know, you're thinking, making sure all these, you know, because this machine's been running standalone for 3 years. You're thinking, I know I set all that up, but you'd start becoming a doubting Thomas almost. And, you know, I got back here to the studio and logged in. I'm like, okay, backups are there. Stuff's up in S3. If I have to, they have to replace a hard drive. You know, I knew I was facing a number of hours of work, but whew.
Yeah.
But, you know, and that's one of the things too, that, you know, I've learned over the years from having a couple of outages that you can panic, and, but it just really does no good, because I guess for a better word, shit happens, you know, and what can you do, you know? But
all you can do is work to get it back up again. I know I had my own co-located web servers for many, many years with my show. At one point I had four different servers that were running in a co-location facility that I had total. I mean, if they went down, it was on me. I couldn't call anybody. I'd have to drive all the way up to Seattle to admin these servers.
Right.
So I know exactly what you're talking about. I mean, anything can happen. I mean, you can just have, you know, a fuse go or something, mm-hmm. and the whole thing comes down. I mean, just, you know, a million things can happen. And that's what's great about today, is that a lot of these platforms that we all put our podcasts on are like cloud servers and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And years and years ago, I moved all my co-location over to Rackspace Cloud. Back in the day, it was called Mosso, is what it was called, and that was prior to Rackspace acquiring it. But it's a similar kind of platform to what GoDaddy has, and I've been there ever since, you know, and have all my websites and everything there, and it's all redundant. It's not on one box.
Right.
It's across a distributed network. And so I've never had an outage since. So that was one of the smartest things I ever did, was get off of my own co-located servers.
Yeah, and I'm still on a dedicated box. So, you know, if it goes down, it goes down. And, you know, it got me to thinking a little bit, is it, you know, if it's time to make that change to a cloud type situation. But, you know, I've got a great sponsor.
Oh, you do?
And,
yeah.
And, you know, so, you know, and I'm just going to have to start looking at their different offerings and see what they have. But it definitely is one of those, you know, heart-stopping moments when your site's online. But, you know, it's if I was a BBC or if I was, you know, maybe a little bigger network, personally, you know, maybe I'd put in some redundancy, you know, put in a secondary server, have, you know, basically do load sharing. If one goes down, the other takes over. You know, and that's something I'll have to make. But, you know, one outage in 3 years.
Yeah, it's not bad, Todd.
You got to look at the money. You know, it's what's the, you know, is it worth 2 hours of outage for not spending $2,000 or $3,000 extra dollars a year?
Yeah.
And, but just added that as an aside. I want to do want to get back to the UK discussion, but I do want to ask Rob. We've been on an email chain this week, talking with a gentleman over at Microsoft. What's going on over there? They're doing something with the, podcasting or podcasting app. I don't have a Windows phone, so I can't, talk to this.
Well, it's actually, the bits for that, actually haven't been fully pushed out to phones in a general way. What you're seeing happen with all of the discussion around the new standalone app for Windows Phone 8.1 is really got made available to developers, essentially. I mean, anybody can get it, right? I mean, if you wanted to go get it, Todd, you could go get it and load it on a Windows Phone and upgrade your phone and be able to see the whole new podcast app and things like that. But mainly it's being downloaded right now by journalists, you know, tech journalists and developers. And that's why you're seeing this kind of, here over the last week, kind of a bump in conversation about, the new direction of this podcasting platform for Microsoft. And it's, I have a lot of details, but I left and, you know, some of the specifics of what they actually have done in this app, it is not 100% clear to me because, you know, things change as this product rolled out. And I was pulling myself out of that process as I was leaving to go to Podcast One. But they have this app. It's basically what you're seeing here is the migration from the Zune podcast service over to a service that's operated by Windows Phone. So this is a pretty significant kind of break from the history of podcast support at the company, where the Zune catalog, which is currently active in most of the Windows phones out there, there's quite a few phones out here, you know, actually not in Europe or outside of the U.S. It's only in the U.S. has the podcast support built into the phones. But you're still talking about millions of phones. And then when this new app comes out, when the Windows Phone 8.1 upgrade happens, then from what I understand, and this is what the plan was, is to have that app be supported across all the countries of the world that have Windows phones. But the podcasts in here don't pull from the Zune catalog. They pull from a query on the Bing search engine.
Oh, that's interesting.
Which I kind of, back then I kind of warned them that maybe wasn't the best way to go. But they chose to go that route. And so what it's doing is it's pulling podcasts that are, the RSS feed is visible to Bing. It's just a regular search against Bing to pull up podcast RSS feeds.
So they don't have a directory per se.
They do not have a catalog. You know, the Zune catalog has not been transferred over because the Xbox team doesn't have a long-term plan for podcasts. So this is part of a kind of a cutover that's happening. So I've been out there on Twitter, even though I don't work for Microsoft anymore, trying to help podcasters understand what's happening here because it's been covered in the press more and more. And it takes us back, Todd, to a very early conversation that we had years and years ago and have continued to talk about, is the availability of your RSS feed on your website.
Yep.
And that's been a bigger and bigger issue. And I did warn the company that, you know, you're probably not going to get all the podcasts by doing a query on Bing. And that's exactly what's happening. Not all of the podcast feeds are currently, you know, available through search. So, so I'm just telling podcasters, you know, if you want to be included in this, you probably have to go back to Podcast 101 and put your RSS feed back on your website again.
Woohoo!
yeah. And some podcasters are probably not going to want to do that just because they don't think that the audience opportunity is big enough to justify it. Or I'm not sure why podcasters don't do it. Is it just because they're
lazy?
They just don't think to do it. I think it's probably, yeah, there's a little bit of laziness, I guess, that could be, you know, attributed to this. But I think that's your best strategy. It needs to be probably on your homepage, and Bing will be able to pick it up when they spider your website. And that's going to be, from what I understand, that's going to be the only way to get your podcast to come up in search.
So Rob, did you download it? Do you have it on your phone?
No, I haven't actually upgraded my phone to the 8.1 bits yet. No, I don't. I want to be able to get the version of it that's supported by AT&T.
Yeah.
So I'm more than happy to wait, because frankly I'm not all that, you know, I'm going to say I'm not all that excited about the whole new podcast app. So yeah. So I think it'll be good as kind of a stepping stone, but also keep in mind that this app is now separate from the operating system. So there is an upside to this, and there's two of them. This app is now separate from the operating system, and it's gonna have a global reach. So the foundation has been set, right? And yep. You can also add RSS feeds directly to the app, which the old Windows phone or the current one that most people have, you can't add RSS feeds to the app on the phone. So it only comes out of the catalog. So there are some foundational things that were set with this. The availability of the app globally, and being able to add your own feeds, which users have been asking for. So now the next step would be to add a catalog and all that kind of stuff. I don't know that that's going to happen, but that's kind of the next step. So at least the company has covered a lot of the most the areas that users have complained about the most is the availability outside of the U.S. and being able to add feeds.
Right.
And so the foundation has been set, and what's great is this app can be upgraded by the company anytime. So it doesn't have to be tied into an OS update, which has been the history of this.
Well, I think they're going to, you know, the first time someone can't find their podcast, they're going to scream bloody murder.
Well, Todd, that's already happening. And that's why all this is coming up right now, is because my Twitter inbox has been getting full with people asking me how to submit their podcast, because most people out there don't know that I moved on to Podcast One. And I had, you know, so many podcasters were aware of me doing the podcast stuff for, you know, the 6 years that I ran it there.
Yeah.
That I can't really escape from that. So that's why I wanted to talk about it. And then also, you know, I've been doing a lot of tweeting about it too, trying to help people understand what's going on here.
So what's been the reaction when you've told them they have to put their RSS feed on their website?
I haven't had any negative reactions to that. I just don't know that people are going to do it. I mean, I think what is always at the foundation of the whole topic of this, whenever I talk to really any podcaster about it in a general sense, is that the Windows Phone platform isn't big enough for us to worry about, you know. So though I think, you know, it's going to be, you know, a couple percentage points of adoption of a podcast today, but I also think that the new update to Windows 8.1 is a significant update for the phone platform. And I think it'll start picking up. I think next year the Windows phone platform is going to start picking up some market share, specifically from the iPhone. And I think it'll pull some from the Android side as well. It's just it's caught up in capability now, where I think in the apps are probably the area that it's the weakest right now. But I think as a phone platform, it satisfies all of my needs. I mean, I've got this gigantic phone, which is perfect for me because I got huge hands. But I'm really happy with it. But I also own an iPhone too. But I pulled this iPhone out, and I think it's a toy. It's this little tiny phone, you know. I have to peck at like a chicken. So, yeah. So I'm not saying it is. I mean, it's a great device. I just, you know, I put it next to this thing, and it's just like it comes up to like here.
That's funny. Peck at it like a chicken. that's about right.
Yeah, well, yeah, that's exactly, you know, I mean, if look at the size of the keys on this phone.
That's right. First, and if you got big paws like you do. Oh, geez. Well,
so that's the rundown on what's happening with the Windows Phone stuff. And if you have any more questions, feel free to tweet me about it, you know, at Rob Greenlee, and I'd be happy to tweet back.
Well, yeah, I think it's good. Until I can grab it and search for my show, you won't know, you know. So,
Todd, I think you're going to be fine because you have all your RSS feeds right on your front page of your website.
Yeah,
I'm sure you're going to be fine.
I went to Bing and I searched for Geek News Central. What's funny is the third listing on it is iTunes, you know. So it's just, you know, it kind of defeats the purpose. But I guess it is what it is. So I guess we'll see. You know, and I think the Windows Phone is being used actually more outside the United States than within.
Yeah. That's true. That's true. It kind of seems like to me that everybody in the United States has an iPhone.
Well, I see less iPhones and more Androids, you know.
Do you now?
Yeah.
I mean, I just see them. I mean, I'll sit down in a restaurant and I did this last night too. And I just look around me. You know, all the tables around me, and it's just like everybody has an iPhone. I don't know if it's just the places that I go to tend to be people.
Oh, you go to these preppy places where all the cool cats are at, right?
I guess. But everybody has an iPhone. I pull out this behemoth.
This monster.
They all look at me and say, "What the heck is that? That's a cool looking phone."
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, Isabella, what phone do you use?
I'm Apple all the way, so it is iPhone. We are Mac family here.
Well,
there's nothing wrong with the iPhone. I actually own one, and I think it's a fantastic, you know, phone. I just my hands are so big. I just,
Well, I'm an equal opportunity user. Mac, Windows, Mac. We use both, and believe it or not, I use the Mac for production. I use the Windows for work. You know, it's
Todd, you and I are the same way. We use the device that we need to do what we need to do.
Yeah. Right?
And I don't hate any platform. There's a lot of folks out there that are like, I hate Android, or I hate Windows Phone, or whatever. I don't hate any of them. I think they're all fantastic.
Although I do have to say, I was after we finished the event last night, we dropped the kids at the mall, which is real close to the event where we walked over to, and so we walked back over to the mall. They'd been shopping. I gave them some money to go shopping. My daughter was happy, so I went into the Mac store, and I really had not got a chance to look at the new Mac Pro. And, you know, I'd seen it online and everything, but I had actually touched the doggone thing. And I'll be honest with you, my wallet was having a hard time staying in my pocket. It kept jumping, you know, I was trying to jump out, and I felt the credit cards moving. They definitely, you know, part of the appeal, you know, I think what's kind of funny is, you know, Adobe, you can do video graphics, everything on equally as well on Windows or on a Mac. And I I just always scold myself. I'm like, here, I've got a fantastic Windows machine that's really high powered, high end, and yet I'm doing video editing on the Mac. Why? Why am I doing that? Why don't I just do it on the Windows machine? And it's, you know, a fourth of the cost. And so, but I think what it boils down to is that sex appeal of those devices.
Yeah.
You know, and they have no more functionality. I mean, none, zero. And my Mac crashes as much as my Windows machine, Windows 7, I don't crash. I crash now on my Mac machine more just on a regular basis. So they're not crash proof. They still dump. I think it's a sex appeal. I think it's what it purely is. But my son is, or my daughter's getting ready to graduate. And I'm like, okay. I said, what do you want? I'm going to buy her a new computer. I said, what do you want, a Mac or a PC? And she says, when she was spent about a day or two looking around, she says, I can get a lot more for the money on a PC. Why don't you get me a PC? And I'm like, okay. And so that's what I'm going to do. And she's been using a Mac for 5 years, you know? So,
yeah.
But when it came down to the finance part, anyway, I digress. But anyway. Well,
there's just so much choice on the PC size, form factors and look and colors. And I mean, yeah.
Yeah. If you want to be a Mac wannabe, just buy the monitor, you know, and then everyone will think you're running a Mac.
Even those are expensive.
Yeah. They're crazy expensive. So anyway, let's go back to the UK side. I do want to talk just a little bit about the scene, you know, when you're in Europe, you know, you're close to, my God, you're driving distance from, you know, a handful of countries. And what do you see as the scene for podcasting in Europe specifically?
You know, I genuinely actually don't know how other countries react to podcasting, how they take it on. I mean, I'm originally from Poland, and if I mention podcasting to any of my friends back in Poland, they are just like, what is it? So people generally don't really know what it is, or, you know, that they can listen to it, or that there are that many podcasts out there. But it doesn't mean that there are none. No podcasters or no podcast listeners. It's just potentially not as popular as it is in English speaking countries. Because of course, when you go outside of the UK, there are so many different languages. So, you know, it's just over the water, there's France with French, then you've got Spanish, then you have German, and a lot of Eastern European languages. So that is, I think, a big barrier at the moment for podcasters to go outside of the English-speaking countries like US, UK, Canada, Australia, or, you know, so it's, I think it's going to be challenging, but it's not impossible.
You know, I know that there's a huge podcasting scene in Germany, but not everyone has German as a second language, and it definitely is one of those kind of, I guess for a better word, siloed podcast community. This past week, I spent a lot of time on the phone with a group of Brazilian podcasters, and we're working on some stuff for Brazil. And Brazil's got a huge, of course, you know, that's not Europe, that's South America, but, you know, we've got a huge, huge, huge podcasting community in Brazil, and obviously Spanish speaking. But the advantage we have there in Brazil is English is a second language for many. So some of them are doing their shows both in Spanish and in English. We've seen in Mexico a number of, there's some very, very big shows. Some of the biggest, and from what I can see, originates out of Mexico. So I think some of those primary language countries, you know, Spanish is a high adoption rate across many countries. So I think, and even here in the United States too, obviously. But, you know, Rob, what do you think?
Yeah, I've been really, really following this trend for a while now. That what you see typically happening in other countries around the world is that the podcasters that are podcasting from those countries typically podcast in their local native language. But yet those countries are big consumers of English podcasts from outside of their countries. That's a typical pattern that you see in non, you know.
Well, that's, yeah.
I mean, that's the pattern that you're seeing because most of the people that live in those countries natively speak the local language, right?
Right, right.
They feel more comfortable making content in the local language versus trying to do it in a second language that maybe they're not as good at. So the whole consumption of that tends to stay within that country or go to countries that are native speakers in that same language. So, you know, what's been difficult about it is that I don't know that that the world is going to converge on this. I mean, because I've oftentimes thought about this because it's like you have the U.S. podcasters and then you have podcasters in Europe and in other pockets of the country or, you know, of the world, but there's not a lot of kind of communication that happens between those things. It becomes very kind of segmented based on local language, right? And
I also think that because of this, partially probably because of this, there was quite a lot of misuse of the word podcast in certain communities.
Yeah.
So what I can notice in our business, we work with a lot of DJs and they order audio and they actually called their sets podcasts, even though they are actually not podcasts in the sense that we mean podcast
right.
should be, but it is just simply the music mix,
yep.
and they call it a podcast. So it's, and this is very common in Europe particularly, so you could see that just well, anywhere in Europe DJs would refer to their mixes as a podcast and they publish it on a website, on their website on SoundCloud, but they don't publish it in the same way as podcasters do here. So I don't know, there will be quite a lot of work that I think needs to be done to actually educate people as to what the podcast is, how it should be used, or, you know, should it, maybe we shouldn't restrict that word to anything specific, but it is happening at the moment and I think it's going to pose some challenges.
Yeah, and one thing that we've, you know, part of the discussion we've had this week is, I really can't go into the details of the project, but, you know, basically our concern was to make sure that what we do, we have everything natively in Spanish. And so we're, you know, obviously we're going to have to hire someone to make sure that, you know, the labels and everything are exactly, you know, or in the native language. You have to do that to make, you know, what we're doing to be more acceptable and usable. I believe PowerPress already has a Spanish translation. I think we've gotten that a couple of years ago. It has to be updated from time to time. But, you know, we've seen generally fans of, you know, maybe our product to, you know, help us with that from time to time, pro bono, which has been awesome. But in this particular case with the folks down in Brazil, we'll probably hire someone to make sure everything exactly right. And we don't, you know, use a word that means something else. You know, there's dual meaning words in every language and, want to make sure that we don't.
But, you know,
anyone.
you could actually question whether something like this is not going to take away from the experience. And I don't know. I mean, it's just, I guess, a doubt that is worth to consider in some way or another, because personally, when I listen to a podcast, and I get used to the presenter. I get into the whole personality. You know, you kind of grow on that and you are becoming a fan in some way or another. Is it going to be possible if it's just a pure translation?
Well,
is it going to be the same experience for the listener as well?
We're not talking about a podcast per se. We're talking about website or a platform. Yeah.
Yeah. But still, you know, podcasters will at some point be faced with with that question. You know, if you want to reach further audience, do you translate it? How do you talk to someone in other countries?
You know, there's also been discussion this week on one of the forums about transcripts, you know, doing a transcript for your podcast. And, you know, it's getting a little off topic here, but I found doing some transcripts that sometimes Google punishes you because you've got a whole bunch of words and there's not a lot of organized context to it. And they think it's spam, and they can actually, having the wrong type of transcript can actually hurt you more than it can help you. Which is, it's kind of odd, but, you know, so I know that some folks were doing, translations of their shows and actually, in a transcript. So I thought that was kind of weird. You'd read the show instead of listen to the show.
Yeah. Todd, I just posted a link to, my blog, in the chat room.
Okay.
And yeah, I did a series of a fairly lengthy two podcasts on the whole topic of the globalization of podcasts. So if anybody wanted to hear more depth on that topic, I would go listen to that series of podcasts that I did. It was probably 8 months ago that I did this. But it has some numbers on there. Todd, if you pull up my site.
I had it on the other computer, so I'm finding the link. There we go.
Okay. Yeah, it has like the top 10 ranked list of most spoken languages in the global population.
Mandarin, English, Hindu, Spanish, Russian, Arabic, Bengali, Portuguese, Malay, Indonesian, and French.
Oh.
And then download referral ranks. U.S., U.K., Canada, China, Australia. And what did you do? You highlight the ones that were top 10 languages there?
Yeah, exactly. Yep.
Hmm. Interesting.
Yeah, so that is a glimpse of what the potential is of podcasting and what languages are going to be, you know, ones that lead the way maybe in the future, right? I mean, if you look at Mandarin, you know, with 1 billion people that speak that language, I can totally see, and I know that there is a lot of podcasts coming out of China now that are in the Chinese language of Mandarin. You know, I got a lot of podcasts submitted to me over the last 2 or 3 years, working on the Windows Phone, and there's a lot of podcasts coming out of that country. Though I don't think they're being listened to by a lot of people in the U.S., but there's a lot of content that's going just to China. And it's because of, I mean, just look at that number. It's a billion plus people.
Yep.
So, you know.
And there's Chinese expats everywhere, you know. So, you know, they've migrated or moved to other countries. So, there's, you know, in every country, there's a large Chinese-speaking population.
Yeah. So I think you're looking at a little bit of a glimpse of what is likely to happen with podcasts on a global basis. And I think it's happening right now. Look at number 4, China.
Yeah.
You know, is right behind Canada.
Yep.
In actual listening to English speaking podcasts as well.
And it was amazing, too. We were getting a lot of calls, you know, on our stat system from folks basically saying, how come, you know, this China is like my number 3 now, and who in China is listening to my show? And I you know, we went and did a lot of extensive lookups and digging around, and is this a bot? Is this a search engine? You know, we really took a good look at it, and it turns out.
Oh, you did?
Out,
oh, right.
Well, yeah, you know, because there was, it became, people were saying, who in the world is listening in China? And turns out that that's the real deal. It's not, it's not bots. It's folks that are actually clicking there. And I don't know if it's expats or if there's people, Chinese people that have learned English as a second language. Sometimes I think English is my second language. But,
and that's not for the reason that we all think, right?
Yeah, well, so you know, so it, you know, it turned out it was a real deal. Now another group that is that I know exists is there's a lot of Japanese podcasts, but my wife says that from her experience, a lot of Japanese podcasts don't last a long time because the first time a Japanese podcaster puts out some incorrect information, the audience is brutal. They are like, you know, it's like they've lost face. And so the audiences can be very, very critical in Japan, and it discourages shows, which is, I thought, kind of a dynamic of the culture.
Huh. Yeah, I didn't realize that. I mean, it totally makes sense, though. I mean, I can see that happening.
So I know that, you know, you guys do a lot more than working on this UK podcast conference. You guys also, you know, you and your husband are the faces behind Music Radio Creative. Why don't you tell us a little bit about that?
Well, it's an audio branding company. We create audio on demand, as you, I can see you pulled up our website there. We work with DJs, radio stations or radio hosts, podcasters and business owners, and we create audio, be it in any form. It's with a voice or with music, we put it all together. We have over 100 voice artists, singers, and musicians on our books. We do business actually last year alone in over 138 countries. So it's a very much a global operation. We have voice artists that speak many different languages. We have producers based in different corners of the world, and we try to create audio that actually genuinely suits your brand. So we try to take a slightly, I guess, different approach to that. But at the same time, we allow you to order everything online. So it's up to you as to how you would like to structure your audio element. We can do as much or as little help as someone needs. We have a team of audio specialists. So quite often when you go onto the website, you will have a little window coming up to actually chat with someone in real life and help you with audio too.
So, you know, and it's amazing how much, you know, I've seen, I know there's a number of companies here in the United States that do the same type of stuff. And I know you guys serve people here in the US as well. How has someone turned me on to a website recently where you can actually, I think the artists themselves or the voice folks are there and you can actually bid for them right on a specific website. Have those types of businesses affected you or are those types of websites or?
Not really. I mean, it's a very different business model. We complete everything. So firstly, we screen of all of our voice artists. So it's a very different market altogether. So we ensure that they have great audio equipment. We ensure that they are professionals. We actually sign agreements with all of our voice artists. So we protect our customers from misuse of audio that has been already created, for example, and things like that. And then we produce it. So we actually add royalty-free elements into the production. So it's not only the voice. Even if someone orders just the voice, it always goes through the producer because what we do is we ensure that the audio, once it's recorded, you can obviously enhance it if it's needed. You can clean it up as well if it's needed again. It just depends on the project type. So it always goes through the producer before it goes out to the customer. So it's a very different business model to bidding sites. So people who go to purchase voice directly from the voice artist, they usually want to do something with that voice themselves, where we serve people who would like to get the full service. So you know, if you need advice as to which voice to use, we can provide that. If you need advice on scripts, we can provide that. And then if you need advice on the actual audio elements, so what music or what sound effects or vocal effects to use, again, we can provide that. So it's, as you can see, very different niche altogether.
It's pretty cool. Rob?
Thank you.
Yes.
You know,
I'm still here. Yes.
You know,
yes.
you know, that sun, you know, every this time of year, the earth has changed its position a little bit. And when the sun comes up, there's a slice right here in this studio that gets me right in the face.
I noticed that. I saw this little white thing on your nose, and I was just wondering what was going on.
You saw the flicker. So I told my wife about it last week. And so up to this point, we've been using blackout curtains, and they haven't completely been effective. So she went to Lowe's, and we're going to hang something in here for the first time to hopefully eliminate once and for all the spot on my face at 6:30 in the morning.
I have to move,
you know, get my to avoid that little beam that comes in.
Todd, that's clearly a first world problem.
You know, that's what, you know, and that's, you know, that's one of the stupid things that podcasters face. You know, my studio's in a spare bedroom, and the bedroom has windows, you know, and I live in Hawaii, and I like to feel the trade wind. So I don't want to just like black out my windows, you know, and freak out my neighbors, first of all.
Well, Todd, I'm sitting in my dining room right now, if that tells you anything.
Well, but you don't have the sun coming right up in your face right over there, too. So,
studio lights can do miracles. In our studio, we actually have a window which never gets curtains.
Right.
But we have lights. We have the studio lighting like you get in a professional photographer's studio. And that actually eliminates the issue.
Well, when you have just a strong stream, one beam that comes in and whacks you, it's not a lot you can do when you have the window. And the rest of the studio's got LED lighting, and
I'm completely surrounded by windows.
By windows, yeah.
You can see that right there.
So I don't know if this camera. Let me see if I can actually. I haven't tried to move this camera for a while. Let me bring it up.
You got a lot of studio lights there, Todd,
and you can see my how effective. You can see those little holes in that piece. That's where the sun's getting through.
Oh, I see.
So anyway, yeah.
Pretty fancy there, Todd. You can move your camera around just by a little joystick.
Yeah, well, I don't use it that much. You know, that's probably the second time it's been used in as many months. We're actually going to change those to fixed cameras. I was able to, I've got this Canon G10. I'm really, it's the same camera that Leo's using in his studio at Twit. These are normally about brand new. In fact, I don't know if you can get the G10 anymore. They're about $1,400. Yeah. I think you have to buy the G20 now. But so it's been out long enough that I thought, maybe let's go on eBay and see what they were priced at. And some of them were like full retail, $1,300, $1,400. But I found one that was listed. I couldn't believe the price. I actually sent the guy a message, what's wrong with it, because he had it listed on eBay for $500. So I bid on it, and knowing that it would go up probably a couple $100 before the end, and I got pretty lucky yesterday. I scored one for $650. So the guy says it's a grandfather. He's only used it for like the kids' birthdays and that kind of stuff, so it's got low hours on it. There's a way you can tell on any digital camera the on time. And I recommend people, when they're going to buy a camera, to ask the person to look in the menu system and tell you how many hours it has on it. That'll tell you how much real true wear and tear the cameras had. And like these cameras here that are my pro cameras, they probably got a couple thousand hours on them, which it's just like a car. The more hours you got them, it's the more miles on them, the value gets driven down. It used to be when we used to have tape, they'd actually tell you the number of hours a drum actually got, you know, was rolling and recording. But being everything now, and these cameras are now digital with sticks, it's, you just have to worry about the optics package.
So do they degrade over time just based on, you know, heat and like that?
You know, I, you just have to watch the color quality on this camera here that I have. I've had some troubles with white balance on that one and getting it to match this camera. That's, you know, when you're running a couple of different cameras, you never can get them to completely match. So this one that's over here is the one I'm going to replace with the G10, and then I'll put this Sony on eBay. I'll sell him, and I'll probably get a couple $1,000 for him, get him out of here, because secretly, the optics in these cameras now, these newer consumer cameras, are
they're really good, right?
They're really good. You know, and yeah. If you've got the right light, the key is the light. If you've got right light, these are perfect. If you don't have the right light, you're never going to duplicate what a big lens camera can do for you. So, you know, that's something. And plus, I'll be able to get rid of some wires. I mean, you know, I bought the HDMI to SDI converters, and they'll just sit right on it, and I'll have a single coax line going to the TriCaster.
Hey, Todd, you told us, I think it was a couple months ago or a month ago or so, that you were working on a package for somebody that wanted to buy your complete CES yeah. production.
Yep.
So did that all go through?
It did. And what happened was, is during CES, a guy came up to me and says, "Oh, you've got exactly what I need. I want this." And I said, "You can have it Friday. And you can come buy it. You can pick it up in your car and take it away. All you got to do is bring me cash." And no cashier checks, cash. Or we go to the bank and we get cash. And I gave him a quote, and he about fell over. And he says, "This is used equipment." And I'm like, "Yeah, used equipment that gets used." And so when I go back to Hawaii, I have to order new. And he says, "Well, can you order me new?" And I said, "I will." And I came back and I did a... I basically did a consult, and I got to pay a consultation fee, and he got dropped $37,000 worth of electronics.
Wow.
Actually,
$37,000, that's it, huh?
Actually, more than that. It was the sale of the TriCaster I did through a third party. So he spent about $60,000 or $65,000 to build his portable studio.
So can you say... who some of the folks were that you were working with up in Bellingham at all?
Part of our agreement too, that we do with folks. We sometimes they require confidentiality, and this was a unique deal. It was kind of a consortium. I had a total of, I don't want to call them companies. I had a company and 10 subsidiaries, a total of 11 groups. I had over 100 folks at the event, and each group ordered a different media package. Some were doing video, some were doing audio, some were doing both, and we drop shipped close to $150,000 worth of gear. And that was my big thing on Sunday. I got there and I had to scramble to get it all sorted out, and I didn't unpack anything. They unpacked, and as part of the boot camp we did, they learned to set the gear up and how to get
wow.
it. Yeah, so that was like one day. It was, you know, and you're telling everybody, stay in your area, don't, because, you know, if you lose a cord or a cable, you're done, you know. And so it was pretty crazy to see all that brand new gear coming out of boxes, and it was kind of fun. It's like Christmas.
So do you do it all by yourself, or do you have a team that goes out?
I do it all by myself, and I have a script. This one was unique, but we've never done equipment before. So this is the first time where we ever did equipment. We've always gone like a three-day deal, but this one here added the equipment component to it. And it basically what it is, it's a corporate group that is going to start, they're adding media to there, and just like, you know, what's going on in the UK, businesses are, and I got a dot right here in my head.
Yeah, you do.
it's just like, you know, businesses are learning that they have to create. Crap, this thing is driving me crazy.
You can't outrun it.
It looks like you've got a sniper just right.
Yeah. So, you know, companies are learning that they need to be creating a message. So, yeah. You know, we spent probably 3 hours on just case scenarios where I talked about where I showed examples of PR disasters where, you know, companies did stupid things and it had the backlash of Twitter and Facebook. And so, you know, probably spent 3 hours just talking about, you know, don't be stupid and doing stupid things with your content to, you know, upset your customers. And, you know, one guy had there, he couldn't get through his head that, you know, that he's not selling all the time. I'm like, you're going to sell, but you're going to do it through, you know, providing good, valid information, not just a infomercial. And we did some samples where folks actually recorded some advertising spots, and they recorded some actual shows and mini shows, to, you know, like 5 to 10 minutes. So we did some stuff and we critiqued them. So it was a lot of fun. It's a fun week. It was busy. We were 12 hours a day. And, you know, much to their chagrin, we didn't finish Friday until like 6 p.m. And, you know, Friday, everyone wants to get out early. But that was for the money they spent. No one was leaving early. But it was good. And I hope to be able to do more of those, because that definitely helps the, how should we say it, the bank account.
Yeah. So do you do these on, you know, like different parts of the country on some sort of a calendar? Or?
Well, it was this one here came from a referral from a group that I've done a number of things. And, you know, I spent a lot of time in Texas, and it seems like every time I was going, it's like I should have moved my business to Texas, but this came from a referral from a group that I did a lot of stuff with last year in Texas. And this group contacted me and asked me to come in. I've done a couple of different things too. I've done events where I come in after a disaster, where a company has really made a big boo-boo and got a backlash. And I kind of come in post PR cleanup and try to help make sure that type of strategy doesn't happen, or make sure they don't do that again. And it runs a full social, you know, just like this thing on Twitter, and it happened with US Airways the other day. I'm sure you guys heard about that. There was a gal that was, I think in somewhere in Europe, she had tweeted that she was part of Al Qaeda and that she was going to, do something in June or something. Well, she got arrested for that tweet, making a terroristic threat to an airline. But what ended up happening then was a bunch of kids were like, oh, you're going to arrest her. So they started doing sympathy tweets. And one of the tweets was, not safe for work in a big way. It was basically a naked woman with it wasn't good. And so somehow US Airways retweeted that.
Oh no.
You know, to their, you know, their followers, and here they have this picture, this tweet of with a pic attached of a naked woman. And it wasn't pretty. It was definitely R-rated. And so it's, you know, that type of a situation. I'm thinking, oh man, maybe I can get a gig with US Airways to go in and talk to them about the stupidity they did on this retweet. You know, so it's those types of events that I do from time to time. I can't move to escape this light.
No, you can't. No, well, yeah. That's not going to help you either, moving off the camera view.
Oh, man.
And also this past week, we had a issue come up with the shutdown of Mevio, finally.
Yeah, they finally pulled the plug. You know, what's interesting here is that, and this is something we dealt with. We helped probably 20 to 30 podcasters move off of Mevio. And they were audio guys that had been around for a while. It's like 2 years.
Yeah, and I was really surprised at that, because I thought that they totally got out of audio.
2 years ago, they shut everybody off. Well, it turns out that the backlash was so big that they turned it back on. Well, the second that they would have turned it back on, if I was on Mevio, I would have been out of there. You know, I'd have immediately made plans to leave. But a bunch of these folks rolled the dice and did nothing. And You know, and the guy's like, I got 497 episodes. And then we pulled his, we can basically query the RSS feed and we can pull the data over.
The data, yeah.
But Mevio had a max of 120 episodes that they would have in an RSS feed. And so he's like, what do I do? I'm like, well, you're going to have to re-upload the 380 or whatever. That's, you know, we'll make it easy for you. Just give us the links and we'll, you know, cut and paste links into a spreadsheet or something. So he went into Mevio. He actually was smart. He deleted 120 episodes. So now his feed had 120 older. He said, okay, pull it again. So we pulled it again. So it basically took us like four times of doing that to get his media moved over. But if you're on Mevio and you haven't moved, too late. It's I think they're done. I think they've shut it down completely. But you know, I guess it's not surprising. I wasn't surprised.
Yeah, I mean, I think that companies like you know, companies are going to go out of business. I mean, right. You just. That's going to happen. I think where the mistake gets into with all these companies is that they give such a short notice to people to transition, right? I mean, didn't they give like just 10 days or something like that?
Yeah, 10 days.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's not enough time.
Well, 10 days is a lot. The last company that went out gave 3.
Well, even worse.
It was 2 days before Christmas, too.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that's even worse. So, yeah.
But
if you're going to shut down like that, I think you need to give your users probably a month notice.
Yeah, I would think so. But, you know, if you may not be able to. If you're
it depends. You're right.
If you're privately held, you can probably do that. If you're a public company, you may not be able to say. You may not be able to mention anything until you go into bankruptcy. You might, because of the stock effect, you know, is going to be affected. So who knows, you know, what...
No, I don't think Mevio had that situation.
No. No. They only burned $39.8 million.
Over a pretty long period of time. Didn't those guys launch like back in 2006,
yeah,
I think?
Something like that, yeah. So I guess they made their money last a long time, but I'm thinking to myself, crap, what I could have done with $39.8 million. You know,
yeah.
You know, you look at it. That's an incredible amount of money to be able to spend on a new media platform. Because I know what I spent on ours.
They had a lot of podcasts that were running out of there, but they were definitely pushing more on the video side for a long time. You know, I got a lot of their feeds. And they also had a branch over in the UK too, and they, you know, to kind of bring that in, they had a part of that company that was producing content for the UK and Europe, also. So I'm assuming that probably shut down too, unless the UK side is still in operation, which I'm not sure.
I haven't heard anything about the UK operation in a while. Have you heard anything about UK Mevio at all over there?
No, sorry. No. I wish I could help, but it doesn't ring any bells.
Yeah, so I think they shut that down a long time ago. And I haven't listened to Adam his show to see if he made mention of it. I'm sure they talked about it, but I haven't looked yet.
John C. Dvorak
and Adam
the No Agenda Show.
Yeah, the No Agenda Show. I haven't listened to them in a couple of months. So, okay, and it's hard to listen to that show. It's 3 hours.
I didn't know it was that long. Is it that long? That's crazy.
Yeah, they do 3 hours. it's nuts. I'm not going to escape this dot.
No, you're not.
So I'm going to try something different maybe to get rid of the dot. So we'll put you up, Rob, and I will stand up and use my little.
But Todd, we like the dot. It looks so becoming on you. It's like you're wearing a piece of jewelry. Well, you're just going to put the camera on me now so you don't have to.
No pressure.
Have to expose yourself?
No. You know what this is?
It's a back scratcher.
And that's right. It also works well for reaching over and adjusting a curtain. So that
a tool for the task, right, Todd? Secret, is that what it is?
Yeah, they saved me from having to get out of my seat and take my headset off or unplug.
And also scratch your back too a little bit.
My wife bought me these because I said, honey, come here. Can you scratch my back? And she's like, here. And then after about the fifth one she gave me, I kind of got the hint that I didn't need to call her to come scratch my back anymore.
That's all I'm good for is bringing you stuff and scratching your back.
Lucky I didn't get it slapped across my face. Don't ask me again. Actually, these things, when the kids were younger, these actually work a dual purpose.
I'll bet they did.
Yes, they do. And this way, this way there, and this way on the behind. So it's you know, it's made of bamboo, so it has a little bit of a give to it. So
just a little bit of a give, right?
My mom used yardsticks on me, so I, you know, she used to go to the fair. And at the
now,
fair,
those don't have much give.
At the fair, you could get yardsticks, and they weren't really that good. So whenever she used a yardstick on me, she broke them. So she'd get more mad when she broke yardsticks. And they weren't like the wood ones that the schools had. They were the cheap, flimsy ones that you got from the fair. So they really weren't that impactful. But they made a lot of noise when they shooshed, you know. And when you're, you know, when you're young, sometimes it's the anticipation of getting whacked that's worse than the actual whack.
Yeah, that's true.
And I'm not advocating corporal punishment, but there's a lot of kids in this world these days that need their ass beat.
Whoa, I'm not going there. No.
All right, we've completely went off the reservation here.
Yes.
So, any final thoughts before we get ready to wrap up here?
I think there just doesn't appear to be a lot of action, kind of a big sense anyway. I've been keeping an eye on the iTunes world a little bit, and there does seem to be a pretty steady flow of new shows and new content coming into the podcasting space. It seems to be kind of exploding. I saw some numbers. I can't remember exactly where I saw it. Was it the numbers of new shows is kind of here over the last 3 or 4 months has been skyrocketing. So I think we're seeing a lot of growth. I just hope that we're also seeing a corresponding growth in audience listeners to podcasting, to the podcasting space. And I haven't seen any current numbers on that, but I know that there's a lot of content coming out. And usually when that's happening, there's also a lot of churn too.
Yeah.
There's a lot of shows that are getting shut down. And there's always new ones kind of coming.
But that's really good that a lot is happening. And with events such as the podcast movement or, you know, any other formal gatherings for people with the same interests, it's not only going to gain some traction in the world of actual podcasters, but also the listeners, because we do need some publicity for people to discover podcasts as some form of educational platform or even entertainment. So it's brilliant to see that so much is actually happening. And it seems that 2014 is going to be the year for podcasting truly this time around.
I will make one small announcement, and it's something that you're going to start seeing our messaging starting next week. Is that we've been had it in plans for a while. Up to this point, blueberry.com has been a opt-in community where folks can come in and add their show at will. We've made some changes. We'll be announcing the changes to our terms of service, removing some restrictions from the site. It used to be if you were a member of the community and did an ad deal, you were essentially locked in then from not doing an ad deal with the same company for the next year. We feel that we're confident enough in our position in the space that in the way the space is moving right now that we don't really have to have that particular restriction on. So we're removing that, and that's going to basically eliminate one of the big factors folks have had to being on the site because they didn't want to be tied into that that part of the terms of service. So we're going to be announcing, well, it'll start coming out next week, that change. And at the same time, Blueberry is going to move from more of a community base to more of a directory base. We're going to be expanding and bringing a lot of shows into the site. We'll be informing the podcasters that they can claim the show. So it's going to become more of a directory. And and what it really is being driven by is listeners are using our site now a lot more. We're pretty shocked on the growth that we've had on the listeners that come in and pick the shows that they want to have a subscription to. And then they are using our MyCast system to subscribe either via the mobile device or on a Roku or a set-top box, be able to consume the content. So you're going to see a rapid growth in the listings that are available at blueberry.com as more of a directory than a community. All the same services are going to continue to be available, the stats and the tie-in with PowerPress if they so desire. But that's one of the changes that we've had planned for a long time that we're actually now going to start implementing.
Wow. That's exciting, Todd. That's good.
Yeah, you know, really what it is there's no, we've looked around and there's, besides iTunes, there is no other single source for really the entire inventory and being actively managed of podcasts in the entire space. And, you know, I think there's 20,000 shows listed on the site now. I expect that number maybe to go to 200,000 based upon some of the initial queries we've done in looking at active shows in the space.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, we've talked about this a lot in the past that there's iTunes and then there's a bunch of other players out there, but they all have just a subset of the total. You know, like a Stitcher maybe has like 28,000 podcasts. That's about all they have.
Yeah.
I know Zune, at the peak of me working on it, I think it had like 35 or 40,000. And then you look at the iTunes, you know, they're over, who knows really how many podcasts are active in that platform, but we're assuming that it's in the 200 plus range. And that's really, I think, because they have invested in building out catalogs for each country around the world. They're really the only platform, I believe, that has built that, you know, and so it's.
And what's driving this too is we've got a number of app developers that are using our platform now to feed, basically to, you load the app, and even though the app is app XYZ, when you pull the data, it's actually pulling our database. It's actually getting the listings from us. And so the app developers have also asked, hey, you know, not everything's in here. So we want that to be, you know, we want all the shows to be available for the, and these are third-party apps that all they've really done is tapped into our API and able to do the API call to pull the directory listings. So they don't have to know. And the main thing is that the app developers can focus on the apps. They don't have to worry about the directory. The directory is maintained by us. And so it'll help those app developers too, and getting a bigger user base.
Yeah, no, that's all great, Todd. I think you know, you taking a leadership role in that, I think is really going to be good overall for the industry.
And we're trying to be careful too. We understand that, you know, it's, sometimes people are sensitive to having their shows added to a third party site, and we've actually done a bunch of stuff within the site to suppress, and this is kind of a weird thing because websites don't normally do this, but we've done things within the site to suppress Google from indexing. And we don't, last thing we want is when you search for New Media Show to find the Blueberry listing to be number one. You want newmediashow.com to be found as number one in the Google search listing. So we're being real careful to make sure that we don't, because we could real easily, because most of these guys don't worry about SEO, we could very easily probably beat them in their own SEO game, but that would be counterproductive and stupid on our part. So we're just trying.
So is there any restriction on people that maybe don't own their shows being able to submit their shows to your platform?
What will happen is if someone doesn't own, let's say it's a listener and they submit a show, what will happen is that they we will go and use the metadata within the RSS feed to contact the original podcaster and say, hey, your show has been submitted. Here's how you claim it. And basically so that they can claim their show and do the update listings. The listener will be able to add a show to their playlist.
Collection. Yeah.
But we're going to send a message to the podcaster, hey, here, you need to claim your show so you can maintain your listing and so forth. So, you know, we're trying to make sure we don't make any of the mistakes that other folks have. And I'm sure there'll be going to be some people that will complain. And that's why we're trying to be very careful on our messaging and making sure that the terms of service is such that they don't feel that they are restricted from doing something, or we don't want to even imply that we're trying to control anything at all. And that being nothing more than a directory now instead of an opt-in community. We're still going to make available, they'll have an opportunity to select when they claim the show whether or not they want to be part of the greater community and participate in other stuff and use our services, but we won't force them into that.
So is Blueberry going to be moving towards trying to build a, you know, like an iOS or, you know, an Android app or anything like that?
You know, we've already got an Android app.
Oh, you do?
Oh, yeah. Okay. So the Android app's been out for a while, but, you know, I hate to say it, iTunes still owns, Apple still owns the podcasting app. I don't know if there's anything to be gained by making an iOS app. You know, we've talked about it several times, but we keep looking at the statistical data for all shows, and iTunes owns it. I mean, they literally own it. There's a few, the biggest next players, maybe Stitcher with a couple percentage points. Is it worth building an app for iOS for the community when Apple has everything? And I still I'm on the bench on that one. Because you just look at the stats, you're like, all right, so we're going to build an app. What are we going to get? A percent of the users? You know, is it worth the money for 1% when Apple owns, 80% of the entire ecosystem, on the iOS platform? I don't think it makes any sense. And I might be wrong, but you look at the apps you guys use. Isabella, on your phone, how many apps do you use?
Quite a few different apps for podcasting, though. One.
Just one. Which one is it?
It's just the Apple one, the standard.
But how many other apps do you use? A Facebook app, Google Plus? What would you say your total, on a weekly basis, how many apps do you think you open? 10, 12, 20?
Maximum 10. Maximum,
though. That's the number I hear a lot. Rob, how about you? How many do you open?
Oh, probably less than 10. Probably more like 6 to 8. And I think, Todd, what you're tapping into is analogous to this whole discussion that's going on around what we saw happen with the web, right?
Yeah.
Back when the web launched, people were going to a bunch of different websites. They're really exploring, right? Back in the early days of the .com days, right? And then over time, people whittled it down to only using like maybe 3 or 4 different websites to do things, right? And I believe that's what's happening. Over the last few years, we went through this phase where people were trying a lot of different apps and messing around and experimenting and trying a lot of different things. But I think people are starting to whittle it down to just the core again. And I think that's the trend that we're seeing happen right now, where people just get locked into using a certain small number of apps that they use every day. And they don't really venture out. I know I don't download a lot of apps.
I get the ones
that I use, and I just stick with them.
I download them. I try them. And if they form some, I have a lot of utility apps. Okay. For example, when I was up there in Burlington, really didn't know where to go to eat. I asked, the hotel staff. They gave you 4 or 5 suggestions. So I loaded Yelp. The only time I use Yelp is when I'm on travel. So it's an app that I have on the system. But it's something I open once in a blue moon, and it gave me a couple good recommendations, and I went and ate dinner from a Yelp suggestion. So, you know, those like the United app or the, you know, whatever airline I'm flying. Oh, by the way, Alaskan Airlines, they have got the hardest seats in any. It's like you might as well just take out with a little pad they had and set on a board. Just put a piece of plywood down.
Todd, I fly on Alaska every week.
Their back and forth seats to LA. Their seats suck.
Their new plane, the Boeing, I think it's this Boeing 737-900ER, which is the one I just flew on Thursday night. They've made the seats a lot thinner, right?
Yeah, they're hard as a rock.
Yeah, so you can get more leg room for the same amount of seats, right? So they've made the seats thinner, which means that there's not as much padding in those puppies anymore.
Okay, so guess what? Take out this much padding and beat my spine up all the way back to Honolulu.
Yeah. Todd, what they need to do is just get a thin layer of the Tempur-Pedic stuff, right? That's what they need to do.
Next time I have to fly Alaskan, I'm bringing a pillow. For my butt.
Ass pad. Todd needs an ass pad for his flights.
Walk on the airlines with a pad. She says, sir, what's that for? I said, that's for my ass.
Oh, gosh.
No, it's a booster seat.
Yeah, absolutely. But yeah, otherwise, they were good. I can't complain. They were fine. So you're going to be like the platinum flyer over there, so you don't have to worry. You get first class upgrade anyway. So,
well, I haven't quite got there yet. I'm sitting at about, I think at about 48,000 miles so far. I mean, not just from flying, you know, just for podcast one, but I'm getting close to MVP status.
Yeah, you get that segment.
Boy, we have gone off the rails, haven't we?
We have, but that MVP status is important. All right, so what's planned for next week? Have we got anybody on tap?
No, not yet.
We're trying to get the SoundCloud guy in, but he's over in the European time zone too. So,
yeah,
Germany. SoundCloud is in Germany, are they?
So,
well, you know, I mean, that's a really interesting point. A lot of the most popular podcast apps out there, you know, outside of the Apple app, are based in Europe.
Yep.
You know, SoundCloud, Spreaker, is it Downcast?
Again, Germany, yeah. There is a lot going on in Berlin specifically. Yeah. There is actually a lot of people say around in Europe that Berlin is the center of all of that happening. So there are a lot of really good companies there.
Yeah, it's a new.
Yeah, it's just not coming out of the U.S. anymore.
Yes, Berlin is kind of like the Silicon Valley of Europe.
It is indeed,
Yeah. Okay, well, we'll let the audience know. You can just watch the website and watch our Twitter accounts. You can follow me at Geek News or Rob at Rob Greenlee. You can email us here at the show as well. If you've got a guest you want to suggest, it could be Todd or Rob at newmediashow.com. And Isabella, where can they find you?
Well, since we were talking about the UK podcasters, I think that will be the most relevant one to share. It's at UK_podcasters on Twitter, or simply ukpodcasters.com. And you can see what we are doing for the podcasting scene in the UK.
Well, we want to thank you for spending time with us here this morning. I know it's late in the afternoon for you. And
thank you for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. Appreciate it. And Rob, thanks for... thanks for the rush getting around this morning on your slightly oversleep. So
throw myself together and jump in front of a camera.
No. Yeah. But I'm off to a soccer match this morning. My son is getting ready for a national event in Riverside, California. So they are.
Wow.
Yeah, he's going to nationals with his team. He's a U10, 10-year-old boys group. So we are in the throes of being soccer mom and soccer dad here. So that happens around the 4th of July weekend. So that will definitely be off at that time. But anyway, I hope everyone has a great Easter. Be safe out there. And Rob, thanks.
Yeah, thank you. And thanks for listening and watching the show.
And everyone take care. We'll see you next time. Aloha.